Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. Today on the show, I am talking to the founder of Dashing Tweeds, Guy Hills. And Dashing Tweeds create modern urban tweeds for the creative, confident man, designing made-to-measure and ready-to-wear menswear as well as selling their cloth. Okay, so let's get to the interview now. Here is Guy Hills, founder of Dashing Tweeds.
Well, it's a kind of a passion, really, but my beginning of fashion was falling in love with photography. So I became a fashion photographer, sort of worked my way up through the magazines, became an assistant after university. Actually did a science degree, and then followed my passion. I got a camera when I was about 15, but then thought I could make a career of it, and had a really successful career eventually in mainstream women's fashion, which was good. But then I got married, and hanging out with beautiful models and going off for 3 weeks to Brazil doesn't go down very well with a new wife. So I kind of then I had a studio in London, and I was looking for some work to do in London. And I always loved clothes, and I was asked to be a photographer for Savile Row, which is, you know, where all the main tailors are. I was actually photographing an editorial job in Savile Row for a magazine, and then bumped into a friend who said that one of the organizers of the tailors, Anda Rowland from Anderson & Shepherd, she was, it was quite an interesting time because Savile Row was really struggling because tailoring wasn't a big thing. This was about 15 years ago, and the rents were going up, and they really wanted to kind of brand Savile Row, and Savile Row tailors didn't have any websites or anything. So they needed a image maker to document everything. And I met Andrew Bolton, who actually is the creator of the Metropolitan Museum now, the fashion department. I bumped into him on Savile Row, and he was a friend of a friend, so I kind of knew him. And then he bumped into Anda Rowland, and she said, "Do you know a photographer?" I said, "Yeah, I just met one up the street." And one of those kind of amazing moments. And then he just got a call, and he said, "Do you want to come into the shop?" And then I said, "What do you want me to do? What do you want to do?" He said, "Well, we just need shots of every single Savile Row tailors and all behind the scenes." And I couldn't believe it. It's like my dream job. And they said, "We haven't got much money, but we can pay you in tailoring." So it was kind of like my eyes then went even more exciting, thinking I could get Savile Row suits. And I'd just gone digital at that point, so it actually didn't cost me cash to be a photographer. It was just a time thing. So so it was perfect timing where I could work in London just starting a young family. And then I had access to a whole of Savile Row tailors that opened their doors to me. My job was just to walk into all of them and go through their archives. And I got paid in tailoring. So it was, like a dream life-changing moment.
Nice. You still got some of the suits?
I've got all of them. I'm wearing one now. Behind me is a whole wardrobe. You can't quite see it, but it's kind of full of them. So that was the beginning. And then I fell in love with, I was looking at all the archives, all the materials in the tailors, and I was a bit scared of being intimidated to go to a Savile Row tailor because, you know, they're just so smart and royal connections and everything. And they were a bit kind of, the face of them is all business suits, grey and blue and everything. But I knew they had something amazing in their archives. So I ruffled through the archives, and they had these books, which I was photographing, which went back 200 years. And Henry Poulsen died 200 years ago. And then you suddenly look at fabric swatches, little kind of bits from the sort of 1860s. And I suddenly thought, wow, these are kind of really wild, wild fabrics, wild colours. They sort of seem more like the stuff that Vivienne Westwood was using. I sort of loved Westwood at the time. And I couldn't believe that kind of the Savile Row tailors had this kind of really cool, colourful, off-the-wall fabrics, which they had hidden in their basements.
How do they preserve them then?
They're literally these leather ledgers, like huge, great big ones with kind of the years on them, all really dusty. Dusty, you know, I can imagine just seeing a kind of film where you go to the basement and blow dust off.
There's the Goonies map right next to it.
Absolutely. And you open them up, and they're little swatches of fabrics which they got from customers' orders. It just blew me away. That's how much colour and choice, and how much fun men were used to have with tailored clothes. So I was getting paid to photograph all this and document it. And I was photographing in a really fashion-y way because other people may be tempted to sort of relish the old school Savile Row idea and do like rake-like and make it look old school. But I was shooting with ring flash, really modern, like really poppy fashion, which was my fashion style. So I was making it look really fresh. And And then I thought, how can I get hold of these cloths? So I said to the tailors, you know, where are these fabrics? And they said, well, they don't really exist anymore. The most of the mills have gone bust and there's not a demand for them. And high street fashion has taken over. And so they don't really exist anymore. So my sort of head was whirling. I was going, how can I get hold of these amazing, colourful fabrics? And the nearest I saw were designers like, well, some early Paul Smith and Vivienne Westwood, some other high fashion people who were kind of cleverly using actually tweed and wool in colourful ways for their purposes. But these ones in Savile Row were even more exciting than like the hippest fashion designers. Anyway, I was looking around and I had a photographic studio in London as well. And I was trying to do some sort of styling work. And I thought if I go to the fashion colleges, I may meet some like-minded people. Because being a photographer, the thing I liked about it was that it's a collaborative process. And when I was on shoots, a bus would turn up and it'd be full of models and stylists. And, you know, we'd work together as a team to create magazine images. So I wanted to kind of create my own team. And I went to the Royal College of Art to the degree show. And I saw this, it was a fridge with the door open and colourful fabrics coming out. And it was all a bit kind of a bit crazy and colourful. And the girl whose this show it was called Kirsty McDougall, and she was a weaver. And I said, wow, I love these fabrics and I love your style. Can we work together? And she said, yeah, sure. What do you want to do? And I said, I wanted to style some shoots and things. And what else can you do? And I said, she had a bit of fabric. I said, can you make me a bit of fabric? And she said, well, I've just left the college, but I can ask the Royal College if I can use their looms for a bit and do a bit of weaving. And one of these ones had chevrons, so it was a bit like bicycle tires had gone over it. And
A herringbone or something?
Yeah, it was like a herringbone. It's a bit like a herringbone, actually, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Guy's just going into his wardrobe then. All of the Savile Row suits are spilling out. Look at that. That is a thing of beauty.
I can actually get a glimpse of these. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, love that.
There's
wow.
It's a bit higgledy-piggledy, but it's a lot of suits in there. And actually, this is this is not pre-arranged, so otherwise I would have had it to hand. But this is one of the very earliest fabrics.
Oh, look at that. I see it, yum.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Gone over. But it's just a really fresh design. So this was something that Kirsty had woven for her degree show at the Royal College. And it actually reminded me of things that I'd seen in Savile Row archive from sort of the 1860s and things. So there was a whole kind of synergy of all this stuff coming together. And I was thinking, I need to have some for myself. I said to Kirsty, how can you make some? And she said, well, I'll do some research. So we found a commission weaving mill up in Scotland. And said, can you weave a small amount? And they said, well, they can weave a piece. So a piece is typically 60 meters, a woven piece.
Right.
So I thought, well, how much does a piece cost? And it's a few thousand quid. And I thought, well, actually, I've got a great idea. So the beginning of you know, how business plans start off when you're just so obsessed you want something yourself. I said, I'll get 60 meters. I'll keep six for myself for a suit. And I'll sell the rest. So, you know, you can't go wrong. I'll finance my addiction and I'll get these my suits made up in the tailors in Savile Row because they were paying me through my photography. So it's kind of all around bartering. So I had this kind of epiphany where I thought, here's a whole way where I can get fabulous suits myself and maybe make money. But that was
right.
I mean, you know about starting a business. You start off with a kind of real passionate idea and then the reality is a hell of a lot harder.
Guy, I think people hear the word tweed and imagine it, or they can see it in their mind's eye, but maybe you could just describe it and give it that kind of Google snippet so that we know for sure.
Oh yeah, I'll try and be brief. I do ramble. So actually the first, this jacket I was talking about, the one that kind of I really loved, was actually a Harris tweed jacket in a kind of brown chevron, which I borrowed from my dad's wardrobe and pretty much wore throughout my whole time at Bristol University, which is always raining and it protected me. So tweed is woven wool, and the actual word tweed is a romanticism invented by the Victorians because there's a famous river Tweed, and the wool which was being sold was called twill, and the twill is, you may not be able to see, but you can see there's a diagonal the check. Well, there's a diagonal here, and that's called a twill structure. So the So obviously wool was what made Britain one of the most, it was the oil of the early, middle ages, I guess so. You know, we just built a whole fortune. Like Norwich was the second richest city after London, built entirely on wool. And Worsted, which is a form of spinning, is a place in Norfolk. But then the mills famously were all situated by rivers because it was all water powered. So it's all pre well, the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. So the Victorians were very good at making up stories, making romanticism. So there was this whole River Tweed. Everyone was getting obsessed. Queen Victoria had bought, had Balmoral built, and there was a whole love of Scotland and genuine British sort of woolen clothes. And so they, people selling it, instead of one salesman apparently, instead of calling it a twill wool, said it was tweed. And then there was a whole idea that the English aristocracy were moving up to Scotland and they were creating estate tweeds. So they were, as soon as you do any weaving, and you have a warp and a weft, so the, you know, one goes up, one goes that way, you end up with a kind of check, and then you change the, yeah, that's quite a complicated kind of pattern.
I'm just pulling up a fabric that was on the Instagram, just for anyone wondering.
And then as soon as you change the colours of the warp and the weft, you get a check. And so you end up with these fabrics, wooden fabrics with the twill in them, a twill structure, which is to do with the weaving process, got known as tweed because of the romanticism of the River Tweed. And then the function of tweed, well, it had lots of functions that sort of people didn't really realize. It was actually camouflage, so to begin with. So it was kind of dyed the colors of the countryside, so browns and greens. A famous Lord Lovett, he used to dye his tweed and get his gillies to walk up the top of a mountain and hold them up at the top and see which one disappeared with all the heather. It's quite interesting. And actually, the heather's all different bright colours. So some of those ones which were camouflaged for the country, they weren't just all green colours. They had like bits of purpley heather in. And so it became a kind of colourful fabric. So it was kind of camouflage. It was sportswear. So if you think of all the early hunting, shooting, fishing, and then later on, like, you know, cycling and motoring, it was all done in tweed. And then it was also the way men wore. It was sportswear in terms of like how we think of modern sportswear. It was colourful. It was relaxing to wear, and it was the way men traditionally wore colour. So it's got so much going for it. And apart from that, wool is just pretty much the most amazing fabric there is.
Right.
I mean, I can go on for ages about the properties of wool, but briefly, it absorbs more moisture than almost any other cotton without feeling wet. So I think get like even put 20% of water into a wool and it can be next to your skin and it doesn't feel wet. Whereas, you know, that horrible feeling having clammy, wet jeans on your skin. They get
cold. Oh, yeah. No, I knew it today, digging ditches out in the rain. I'm very familiar with it.
You weren't wearing, you should have been wearing tweed. What were you wearing? Well,
I didn't want to get any decent tweed wet or ruined or muddied. So I was just wearing my work gear, shall we say.
Actually, that's a really great thing about having a kind of a wardrobe, building up a wardrobe. It's if you build up a tailored wardrobe, then you get to a point after, I mean, clothes last so long when they're tailored, as you know, but you get to a point like after 10 years that you've kind of sort of retiring one of your smart suits and you just wear it for gardening. And then it becomes it becomes even better. And then you don't really care about it and you play football with the kids in it and you just get it covered in mud. And then it becomes even more enjoyable. Well, that's what Lucian Freud, the famous painter, he had his suits made in Savile Row and then he just sort of painted them and got them covered in. I mean, that's how you should wear, tailoring. You should just sort of, it's the whole idea that it constricts you or, it makes you feel that you're, have to act in a certain way is, but it takes a bit of time, obviously, just to get totally relaxed if you're not used to wearing a tailored jacket because people may not enjoy it. But once you actually have something that's properly fitted with a high armhole, fits close to your body, it's just the most comfortable thing. And then you realize you can just do absolutely anything in it. That's the aim of, I think, all tailoring and tweed and wool.
So, Guy, tell me about when tweed became commercial for city use. I mean, we talked about the origins and when you can use it as sportswear in the country, but when did it come so kind of ubiquitous that people could wear this in the city?
Oh, funny enough, well, I was researching this a long time ago, so my facts may be not entirely right, but there was a London Scottish regiment run by Lord Elcho, and I can't remember the exact date, but it's Victorian times. And he invented a fabric, a tweed, which was called Hodden Grey, which was a kind of urban grey colour. So it was designed to fit in, you know, I was talking about tweed being camouflaged for the country. It was actually designed to sort of work in a London environment. So that was sort of the first, when I was doing my research, the first idea that there was, because tweed is a more robust fabric compared to in the Victorian times in the city, people be wearing finer, they're still woolen suits, but kind of worsted suits. And they'd typically be very smart and black and white. Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Just flashed up a picture of one of our grey peaks, which almost has a kind of urban. The evolution of Dashen tweeds has been all about creating tweeds for a more urban market and a more fashion orientated market. That was the Lord Elcho's London Scottish Regiment with the invention of Hodden Grey. It was in Victorian times, was the beginning.
But then the fabrics get lighter, so they become easier to wear. Does that play a factor?
Traditional tweed for the country, that really thick thornproof stuff you get, which is sort of very tightly woven and is sort of 20 ounce plus. If you wear it indoors, you're not going to wear that kind of stuff in an office job. There is the whole idea of then people thinking that wool is too hot to wear in summer or in offices or in town. But it's sort of nonsense, really. It's not nonsense. You just need 20-ounce tweed suit. It's going to be too hot. But you just need to make finer weights, which I guess is your point. So you end up with... when people come to my shop, I explain the two different types of wool suiting products there are. There's tweed, which is made of a woolen yarn, it all starts off with obviously the sheep is sheared, and then they what's called card the wool. So they have this big drum with these spikes, and it makes the wool puts air into it, but the actual wool fibers are going in all different directions. But whereas worsted yarn, they comb it, so it all goes very, very, very slick. And then they twist it very, very highly in the spinning process. So you end up with what's called a worsted yarn. And that's what pretty much all business suits are made out of. And then a woolen yarn is the wool, the hair, typically thicker, hairier wool. And you end up with a tweed, which is scratchier, basically.
Right. And do you make a bespoke in Dashen tweeds, or do you... or do you give that to the Savile Row cutters to make? How does it work?
Oh, yeah. Well, just to sort of backtrack a tiny bit. So then I started making a piece of fabric for myself. And then I spoke to some friends and thinking, I've got to try and sell because I had the 60 meters woven and then I needed 6 meters for myself. And I thought, well, how do I sell the remaining meters? So I was working as a fashion photographer and had some quite good connections. So I spoke to this friend of mine, Kinvara Balfour. She was styling for a magazine I was working for. And she had a very early website called Daily Candy she was writing on. And she wrote an article about me and then about the Dashen tweeds. Because I just had to set up with Kirsty. I said, let's just set up a brand name for this company, which at the moment was just Seoul only had one customer, which was me. So weaving this sort of cloth. And then she wrote about it. And Converse read about it. They loved the idea that we were modernizing tweed. We haven't really stepped on that bit yet, but my idea of the tweed was obviously to take it into an urban environment and make it urban colours and not traditional country tweed. And I had this other idea, because I was always cycling around everywhere, to incorporate a reflective thread into the tweed to add to the modern sportswear element of it. Anyway, so I was writing, she wrote about that, and Converse rang up from Boston and said, we love your idea, can we collaborate? And they cut a long story short, they made 30,000 pairs of co-branded shoes, which I've got one.
Wow.
Here. Got one here to show you.
Very cool. Love that.
It's a Jack Purcell Converse covered in one of our colourful tweeds and co-branded with our name.
Get that to the camera guy, please, so we'll have a closer look at that. That's genius.
Yeah. So that was that. That was, you know, the kind of, in terms of entrepreneurs and I don't really think of myself as an entrepreneur, but I think of myself as a sort of passionate tweed lover. And then I had a stroke of luck with this person, with Converse, doing a very early collaboration with us.
Fantastic.
And anyway, that led to me then, I opened the shop. So then to cut to what you were saying, now in the shop, we design all different ranges of fabrics and we design a whole range of tweeds for the winter and then sort of summer tweeds, which are mostly worsteds. And then people come to our shop and we work with a whole range of tailors. So we've got some Savile Row tailors if they've got deep pockets. We've got a made-to-measure tailor. We've got a seamstress downstairs who does sort of soft tailoring. And we've got some city tailors who we recommend as well. So it's all about people coming to us, being inspired by the fabric and then working out what they can afford or what they want to have made in the fabric.
Fascinating. And do you get approached for a lot of collaborations? Because I imagine you're kind of spearheading this flamboyant tweed wearing. So, I mean, trainers is one thing. That's a great idea. But like interiors, car seats, you know, I mean, imagine it's kind of like endless.
Yeah. I mean, it's wool is such a fantastic material. So it is great for making. We did some bags with Fred Perry, which was quite good. And then my brother's got a company called Retruvius, which is an architectural salvage company. And we've worked with them designing some special fabrics and covering furniture and chairs and some bespoke projects for them. Wow. We work with the film industry a lot now, but I have to sign NDAs, so I can't talk about it. But basically, we design fabrics for major films, which is really exciting. What I get passionate about mostly is people like today. Some people came into the shop and they wanted to buy something. They heard about them, but they weren't quite sure. And I was showing them all the fabrics. And this lady brought in her husband, and the husband said, "I've only got a blue." He liked a tailored jacket, but everything I've got is dark blue. I want something different. And then you can start explaining how we designed all these more colourful things and how much choice men used to have, because most men are terrified of colour. That's the And actually, the funny thing is, I was born in the 60s. So I kind of, when I was in my formative sort of young years in the 70s, I find it quite amusing. But you look on television and then the newsreaders had to fit in with what people were wearing. So they were wearing bright yellow kipper ties and, you know, huge things. You know, they were kind of really conservative people. And all they wanted to do would be the kind of men who would just sort of slip into the background at a party. But in order to slip into the background in the 70s, you're going to have to wear a bright yellow kipper tie and purple shirt and stuff. So kind of what I was familiar with. And then I actually later in life, the rave scene kicked off, which I thought was really good fun, participated in a lot. So I've kind of had a lot of color in my growing up, and I think a lot of men haven't had that. Like if their product grew up in the 90s, for example, and they're absolutely petrified of color. That's a big aspect to dashing tweeds as well.
Well, you hit upon something quite interesting there, because when I was going through your Instagram page and there's a picture of Guy modeling in the store, I presume.
I'm wearing a green check suit with a pink shirt and one of my cravats with bicycle chains on it.
Yeah. Love that. But I did get the feeling that there was a 70s vibe or a subcurrent going through the brand just because of the fullness of the cut. I mean, I kept thinking like perhaps Tommy Nutter of the day, something flamboyant that he would wear. So would you say like there is a house signature, or am I way off?
No. You're not way off. But the funny thing is because I've been so lucky to have all this research for studying all the archives in Savile Row, I can go back to referencing sort of about 200 or 300 years of men's style. So you're totally right that those trousers look 70s. But then I was sort of referencing more like Oxford bags from the 20s in terms of that particular cut. And then I've got this book, which... if a tailor sees me carrying this book, they get they kind of start quaking and going, "Oh my God, what's happening?" Actually, it's quite hard finding tailors who are really creative. But there was one city tailor who I was using at the time, Russell, he's called it, Graham Brown, and he was just happy to do anything I wanted. And I brought this book along, and it was a historical, written by John Peacock. It's basically a history kind of textbook, and it has historically accurate drawings going back to sort of 1600s. And it's just got so much innovation. And then that really is something I learned about tailoring. It's men's tailoring is all about form and function. Every single aspect, the buttonhole on a lapel, you know, used to go to a button here so you could do things up. Every single aspect of a tailored suit has a purpose. And some of the Savile Row tailors still have little horses, like little, you know, wooden gym horses for people to get their breeches fitting just right. And the cut of breeches, for example, that they've got a special twisted seam, which Levi's used for their twisted jeans. But it was just something that's been around for 150 years to make it more comfortable to sit on a horse. So the form and function of tailoring I'm fascinated by. So, yeah, so you can see different themes like, Tommy Nutter was kind of the last person when work in Savile Row to really bring high fashion and all tailoring together and become incredibly kind of influential to pop stars of the day, the Beatles and all the young stars. At the time, there was also Mr. Fish. But it was people were still heading towards Savile Row as the place to buy clothes. And then those people brought the high fashion to it. But after that, the high fashion basically went off into the high street and left Savile Row behind. And that was sort of my, that was my purpose for working when Savile Row asked me as an image maker, as a photographer. They wanted to sort of bring people back to Savile Row and encourage them to go back to tailoring. And that's kind of almost what I'd like to do in my shop is really, it's a real education. You've got to say to people that tailoring is not about getting a stuffy business suit. It's basically about anything you want. And this is something I'm really quite passionate about, is you've got to educate people to, once they understand what tailoring can do for them, they could be their own fashion designer. Because a lot of people think fashion is something out there. It's dictated by someone else. They dictate to you what you should wear. Whereas the whole idea of tailoring and the empowerment of men designing their own suits is that you are the fashion designer. You can tell the tailors what to do. And the really interesting thing I tell people about bespoke tailoring is all you ever hear is bespoke this, bespoke that. What you never hear anyone say is, I'm bespeaking a suit to my tailor. I'm the person who is bespeaking what I want. And you hear from the tailors saying, this is a bespoke suit, but you don't often hear someone say, I'm going to bespeak this particular to my tailor. It's bespoken for, exactly. So that changing that dialogue where the customer is in charge and they can bespeak whatever they want is what I'm passionate about. So I kind of try and educate people to come to my shop, and obviously chatting to you now, to say that once you've got enough ideas and you've actually read some history, and there used to be these brilliant books like Tailor and Cutter, and they used to tell the customer all the different types of cuts available, and so they'd give you some armor, ammunition rather, for going to your tailor and saying, this is in fashion, this is the latest cut. And the interesting thing about the books, they'd also actually have little patterns so the tailors could actually make what you wanted. So my idea is it's the most sustainable way of getting clothes and most enjoyable for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned fashion design as well. You must be like part salesman, part stylist as well, because your suits and your fabrics are so different, and you have to kind of coordinate some of the colors that might be going on with the check, for example, that's got to match the cravat or the shirt. So you find that when people come into the shop, you have to almost nudge them slightly into where they should be thinking.
Okay, more than nudge them. I literally just throw bolts of fabric over them and say, look at this, doesn't it look great? And they go, oh my God, I'm terrified it's not navy blue. And then you actually sort of, they go, actually, it's quite cool. And then you say, like, it goes with your eyes, and then you can accessorize it with this color and you can go on a personal color journey. Although I've actually discovered loads of people are colorblind. So many people come to my shop and say, I really like what you do, but I'm actually colorblind. Can I take the swatches home and show my wife? But this is quite interesting.
I think people a lot of the time, no matter how much they know about suits and fabrics and fashion, they almost want to be gilded into something, because it's something new that they're going to get from the shop. There's something new that they're going to be taught. I mean, they might have a base knowledge of what goes with what, but then if you're going to say, look, I've got this over here, you've not seen this before, it can go with this over here, and then you can pair it and you can match it with your eye color and you can do all that with your skin tone, and then they've got a ground knowledge, but they've got something new from you, if that makes sense.
And you've hit on two great things. One is the ground knowledge, so the people sort of having a little bit idea of what they want, and then the other thing is actually offering people more choice, because you go into any other shops. I mean, the whole point of Dashing Tweeds is we're totally at the end of the spectrum. You've got all the other shops, and Dashing just fills this. I like to think we fill holes in right in the extremes of things. People have got everything, and then they come to Dashing because we're just doing extremely interesting, colourful things. So it is a journey for people, and when they start the journey, they may start it somewhere else, and they may end up sort of an addiction, wanting stronger and stronger doses of sort of color and interesting textures and things. But then again, if people knew more of the history, they'd realize that they've just been fed by the high street and by main fashion, just been fed a diet of white bread and butter for years, and all the colourful salads and vegetables and all the flavours have just been missing, because it doesn't make economic sense for the big companies to do. And even dyeing certain colours is expensive. And that's another aspect, actually, that people have forgotten about in terms of colour. That there used to be a whole etiquette of how expensive certain colours were. And black was the most expensive colour. So people didn't really realise that. So then the people were wearing black because it was so expensive. And then Queen Victoria was in mourning and wearing black. So people were wearing black because there was so much colour around. So Beau Brummel, which is obviously a very famous menswear influencer, I think one of the sort of first and most legendary ones, he was fighting against a very colourful background in the Georgian times, where they were all bombarded by colourful silks from jacquard-woven silks from France and Italian fabrics. And so it was a barrage of colour. And then he had this purity of black and white, when was he around? 200 years ago. And that's kind of that's gone all the way through, and people have then just lost all the idea of the colour, which other people would have been aware of. So it is that whole re-education of how much fun, how much joy colour gives you. And when the customers come to the shop and they get a suit, a colourful one, and then they go to a party, people come up to them instantly and go, "Wow, you look amazing!" And they start
So when I was younger, I read this book about what you should have when you go to parties. It was kind of like one of these really horrible bullshit books about how to get everyone to like you or something. And you had to have something like it was called a what's it. Now, it could be a badge, or it could be a headband, or it could be something that someone would come up to you and go, "Where did you get that?" And I'm just thinking anyone wearing one of your suits is not going to kind of stand out for any of the wrong reasons, but people are going to want to gravitate to you by just going, "Well, I need to know where you got that suit," for a start.
Well, that absolutely happens. I mean, that is kind of a whole suit. If you're starting off with a what's it, which is a badge, and then going to a whole suit is a big jump for the person in the corner. So then maybe, and it also happens in my shop, people come and they get a hat. So they're wearing all their sort of grey and black clothes, and they get a colourful hat, and then that starts the whole, that's their kind of little thing. And then they come back for a bigger dose, and then they go, "I'm going to get a waistcoat, I'm going to get a jacket." But you are right. You know, once you've gone full dashing, and then you're at a party, the door's open, and everyone goes, "Oh wow, the party's here, you've arrived." And that's definitely happens.
Well, because I think also when guys have typically bought suits that aren't familiar or have never really wanted to buy suits before, they'd have to buy it for an occasion, which might be a job interview or a suit for a wedding or a funeral or a black tie event. But they don't really get shown how to wear suits for fun or
that's
the
really
fun side of a wardrobe. So once they now have a kind of like we were going back to the baseline of what they like in their wardrobe, you guys are the kind of that funky door that you can go through and find a new wonderland behind it.
You've hit on a really important point. Is people think of suits for the right reasons of looking really smart for interviews and formal occasions. So that's kind of baseline of have you just have to. Well, it's becoming less now, but you had to get a suit for the job. So then the idea of wearing one for pleasure with the colour wasn't kind of the thing, especially if you were kind of in a rock and roll era, and I guess started in the 50s. Well, the 50s they were starting to wear suits, but then they started wearing leather jackets, and then it was all about not wearing the suit and not being with the establishment and everything. But I find actually now it's the establishment. You don't go to the city now. You don't see people in beautiful pinstripe suits anymore. The establishment sort of disappeared. So it's actually more rebellious to be wearing a colourful suit for pleasure, which is definitely a good point where dashing comes in. But then, people start off wearing a suit for work, and then it is a bit of a mind jump to thinking, "I'm going to actually spend my hard-earned cash on getting a tailored suit just for the whole enjoyment for wearing," because our stuff is not for wearing to work particularly. He flashed up one of our customers who's a hairdresser, and he's just obsessed by our fabrics. He's such a great chap, Rob Walton, and he wears obviously the suits for work because he's the talking point of his shop, and
he's front and center.
So that's obviously not a business suit, but that's a kind of path people have to cross to get into the idea that they're getting a tailored suit for occasions that you don't have to have one for, just for the sheer pleasure for tailoring and the joy of it.
I've got a question for you before we head off, because I appreciate it's a Friday night and you've got a life to get on with.
Yeah.
You mentioned films that you did fabrics for. Now, I know there's NDAs and you can't talk about specific films, but is the relationship with like the filmmakers, they'll come to you and say, can you make a fabric for such and such a tailor? They'll make it and they'll have their name on the end credits. Is that kind of the gubbins of it?
No, I mean, it's many costume designers who know all about fabrics. And the great thing about what we do is we're working with these fabulous mills in Scotland and using the best quality wool and fabulous weaving and finishing. So our suits hang and look amazing on screen. So the costume designers are just looking for fabric, which just tailors fabulously, and they quite often just make them in their own tailoring, and they set up, I haven't actually been to visit too many of them because they're all quite secretive, but they have whole tailoring studios in Leavesden and Pinewood and everywhere, right, where they make stuff up. So the costume designers searching, I guess they know everything, search the whole world for interesting fabrics, especially for sci-fi movies where they want fabrics no one's seen before, because obviously you can't have naked sci-fi stars, so they still have to wear clothes, and wool just looks so good on camera. And it just hangs and everything. So they come to us because of the quality of the fabrics, and it's a design people haven't seen before.
Right.
So yeah, so that's how it happens. So we have very little to do with, I'd like to say that we work closely with people and they say, can you tailor some suits for us? But their point of view, they're just sourcing something which is just fabulous. And then we can't talk about it because otherwise it'd be so much noise for their films. But yeah, that's just one aspect of what we're doing. We've got an agent in Tokyo and they've got 100 tailors who have our bunches. We've got bunches in about 50 tailors in Europe. We're constantly adding twice a year. We do new designs, which we send out swatches to the tailors. People just come to our shop or they email me and I send out fabric swatches to them. So everything is about us constantly making really interesting fabrics.
That's interesting.
So whether it's film designers or individual tailors or just sort of people coming off the street.
And has Tweed come back into vogue thanks to perhaps period piece films or drama series? Peaky Blinders is an obvious one that I'm thinking of. Has that kind of had a ripple effect down to you guys?
Well, it's funny because like literally every single year you read an article saying Tweed's back in fashion. It's never gone out of fashion. The thing that happens is Peaky Blinders have the 8-piece hats and things, and then that's a style thing. But people are always picking up on some aspect of tweed or colour. And I mean, I'm not influenced by fashion, but I like to think that I'm always looking around and influenced by the zeitgeist. So we're always responding to the zeitgeist by weaving fabrics in new colours and everything like that. So there is constantly like an evolution of our fabrics, which are tweed and woven wool, depending on sort of fashion and styles. It's never ever gone out of fashion, basically.
Well, I'm a fan. I love it. I love the shop. I love the brand. The suits look terrific. Well done, Guy. You've really made something there over in Marylebone. And I think maybe Baker Street for people that are in London.
We're on the corner of Dorset Street and Chilton Street. That's our flagship store. We've got 5,000 meters of fabric downstairs. We've got loads of tailoring suits you can try on, and then we can have a lot of fun talking about, more depth, everything I've touched upon on your show.
Fantastic. Well, in the meantime, you can check out Guy over at Dashing Tweeds on Instagram and dashingtweeds.co.uk, I believe is the place people can hang out as well.
If you delve into my Instagram quite far back to lockdown, I did these crazy videos in this very room in my wardrobe, pulling everything out and trying it on, talking about the history of menswear. You have to go quite back to like literally beginning of the pandemic. But they're on the Instagram somewhere. They're very amusing.
Love it, love it. So how much wardrobe space have you got versus wardrobe space?
My wife, So literally, I can't really move the camera around, but this entire, all the way.
Oh, she's got a wicker basket in the corner. There, that's what Guy just showed.
That's my side. And then my wife's the other side, but there's a door in the way. So it's literally, I'd say, about a quarter.
Guy, thanks so much for jumping on. Really enjoyed talking to you.
And, a pleasure. Yes, pop by the shop for a cup of tea next time you're around.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content, and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you'd like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.